Good afternoon. It's 3:30 and you're listening to Local Motion here on KVNF, your weekly source for conversations about people, ideas, and issues that affect your world. I'm Travis Bubenik. The guests on our program today are heavily involved with North Fork Ambulance, a nonprofit and volunteer EMS service that's been serving the North Fork Valley and surrounding areas since 1969. The organization provides the only EMS service for the North Fork Valley and nearby areas, and it's predominantly run by volunteers. In the studio with me today is Richard Kinzer, the North Fork Ambulance Board of Directors President and Operations Chief.
Hi.
I'm also joined by Kathy Steckel, Director of North Fork Ambulance.
Hello, Travis.
I'm joined as well by Dory Funk, a physician in the area and on the board of the North Fork Ambulance Association.
Good afternoon.
Thank you so much for being here. Dory has been practicing in the area since 1994. Kathy has been North Fork Ambulance's director for 2 years and was on the group's board of directors since 2005 before that. She's been a North Fork resident since 1985 and spent many years running calls for the association before her leadership positions. And Richard has been a certified EMT since 1972 and has been a board member since 1976. So you all have very long histories working with the organization and in the realm of emergency care in general. So I'll open this question up to you, Richard. Can you give us a brief history of the organization and maybe talk about how it came together at its onset?
Originally, the emergency services were handled out of by a gentleman by the name of Harry Taylor, who was the local mortician at the time. And whenever there was an emergency call like that, he would go to the resident, pick them up, and take them hurriedly to Grand Junction at the time, because that was primarily the only emergency service or hospital around at that time. It came very apparent to Harry and others that was taxing him physically and mentally and emotionally, because that's all he could do. And so local citizens decided that they would form a district or an association, and back then it was $7 for a year for a household. And from that point it has just blossomed to where we are today with the care that we provide.
I'm curious as to the time scale of how long it took to really get the organization together. I mean, was it an overnight deal, or was this something that people were thinking about for months or years? How did that happen?
Well, when it was decided that Harry was not able to do that, it came together fairly quickly. It was about 6 months, and they pooled their monies locally and formed the association. And then they bought their first ambulance, which was an old Oldsmobile Hearst that was converted to an ambulance. And so from that point, there were several grants sought after in the memberships. And like I said earlier, we've evolved to where we are today with five rigs, mm-hmm. three different locations, towns.
Yeah. Whatever became of the hearse?
It was sold, and then with the grant money, they purchased another ambulance.
So apart from Mr. Taylor, were the other people that were getting involved and trying to get this organization together, did they have background in medicine or emergency care?
No. When Harry decided that he couldn't do it anymore, the association was formed, and then there was about six individuals that traveled to Grand Junction two nights a week for about 8 months at that time, taking classes. And that was the first real EMS background or group of people. And the second class was about eight individuals. And then it just started evolving from there. As people realized the need, they started stepping up, filling in wherever they could, either as driver or EMT. And originally, there was one ambulance. It was housed in Peonia. And then when there was a call in the other two communities, and they had an EMT, there was someone from Peonia that would drive the ambulance to that community, pick up another EMT, and go administer care. And now we've got ambulances in all three communities.
And these people would just leave their jobs if necessary.
That's correct. It was totally volunteer. Still is to this day. That's how we function. Our base is volunteer.
Now, from the group's onset, was the idea to make it into a certified nonprofit, or was this more of a grassroots, just collective volunteer effort?
It's volunteer, collective. It's always been a nonprofit, volunteer organization.
I'll open this question up to any of you, really. I'm curious as to how common nonprofit ambulance services are. It seems like kind of a unique thing.
There's quite a few around in the state of Colorado. They are becoming less and less available or successful to stay as a nonprofit. Most of ambulance services form a district, and when you form a district, that goes into a tax base. You become a taxing district.
Mm-hmm.
There are several communities that have looked at how we've set up our organization, and they're trying to glean how we've done things. Not that we've been perfect all the time, but we've look at the years. I mean, we've been able to survive. And so I think there's some logistics there that are beneficial, but it all comes back to willing, committed volunteers.
Kathy, we don't get any tax. We're not a tax district. We don't get any funding from
No, we're funded by grants, donations, membership fees, and non-patient, non-member transport fees.
So given that funding, what were some of the early challenges to keeping this organization going, or what are some of the current challenges to it?
Well, the original challenges was based totally on volunteerism, you know, keeping the equipment up. It was very, very tight back in those early years. It's still tight. You got to watch your dollars and cents, or you can be out of business really quick. But honestly, I think our success has been due a lot due to the volunteerism, the commitment that the people that are volunteering do give their time. And I think we've got a board that has been, over the years, very careful with their money, how they spent it, and trying their dead level best not to create a tax burden.
Have you had a pretty consistent volunteer base over the years, or has it wavered at all?
It's been up and down with any volunteer organization like that. You gotta stop and think. Volunteerism isn't what it used to be years ago, where people were available. Most everybody's working now, both male and female, and so what happens there is you're asking a volunteer to take away monetary income from their jobs. Some employers are lenient, some are not.
Do you think people have had a hard time staying committed to this volunteer effort in particular, given the recession and the tough times here lately?
I think there's some truth to that. But, you know, the bottom line, honestly, is whether we have good times or bad times, we have to have volunteers to make this organization function the way it is right now.
Right now, don't we have approximately 90 volunteers that are either drivers or EMTs?
It's around 70 right now. And out of those 70, we probably have 40, you know, very active people. And then we have people that are not able to volunteer as much as others. But that's the nature of it. Some people have more time to give and some people have less.
And all the volunteers are certified EMTs, or at least the drivers, I guess, who go on the calls?
Drivers are CPR certified and hold a Colorado driver's license. And then the EMTs are all state of Colorado certified EMT basic or higher level.
You know, those 70 volunteers provide a service that a private service would never be able to cover on a for-profit or probably even a tax-based
foundation.
Why is that? We've got five rigs, one in each of our small communities, our Hotchkiss, Paonia, and Crawford. probably if a private entity came in and took over the service, it would be one central location.
Very true.
And when we often have more than one rig out at the same time.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, Kathy mentioned previously, we cover about 1,500 square miles.
So you're saying that this organization is doing it more successfully than private ones do in some ways?
I think we would see a drop in the services that our community gets if it went private.
Let's talk about the availability of those services, or really just the availability of healthcare and emergency care access in general here in Western Colorado. I feel like it's no secret that rural areas are traditionally sort of underserved when it comes to healthcare. I mean, whether it's doctors, pharmacies, ERs, or other services. So even though your organization is serving that need very well for this area, do you think there are still areas in our broader Western Coloradan region where people still aren't getting access to the emergency care they need?
Yes. west side of Montrose County is an area that historically has had a deficit of care and remains that way. And multiple entities have been out there to try and correct that, some with greater success than others.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that a deficit of care in terms of, like, ER room availability or ambulance service?
The west end of Montrose County, I don't know in particular about their ambulance service out there, but everything, emergency services, they have to take people to either Montrose mm-hmm. or to Grand Junction, and usually it's by helicopter.
Yeah, that west end down there, they've got a lot of mountainous terrains and long, long trips. Sometimes very, very slow trips just because of the train. And, you know, it may be limited as far as time, mm-hmm. but somebody gets there.
Yeah.
But it may take some time. So it depends on how you look at people getting or not getting. You know, eventually they get it, but it may not be in the timely manner that folks would really like to see. I don't know if anybody that's ever been denied mm-hmm. services, it may just take a time to get them. And I'm sure there can be an improvements in areas like Dr. Funk mentioned. They do struggle in that part of the country.
Do you think any sort of struggles when it comes to emergency care are just due to money, or are they just due to people not having the time to form some kind of organization like this?
I think a lot of it ties down to the people's ability to do it. You know, they're working full-time jobs trying to eke out a living, and I'm sure there's people out there that if they were encouraged to step up, they could. And that's been our endeavor, to get those people to be encouraged to help us in our endeavor with the Norfolk Ambulance and be a part of our community, put back into the community.
I believe that the state of Colorado mandates the counties to provide emergency
That's correct.
Medical service. But it's an unfunded mandate. It doesn't come with any funding from the state.
That's very true.
So each area is up to either creating a district and going through property taxes, or a service such as ours as mm-hmm. a volunteer nonprofit service that isn't tax-based.
Mm-hmm. So
sorry, care costs money. And there's parts of our country out here where there's just not the money to support the kind of infrastructure it takes to provide modern medical care, especially to people's expectations.
I wanted to ask about that infrastructure for your organization, too. What are the expenses like? I mean, you said you have 5 rigs. I'm assuming that paying for these ambulances and the medical equipment and even just the gas has got to be a huge drain on the organization.
Gas alone on a monthly basis is well over $500. That's just one of the expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping people trained, keeping medical supplies available, equipment up to snuff and certified costs lots of dollars. And so far, we've been able to survive.
What's the cost of one rig?
An ambulance bare bones is almost $80,000, and then have about $20,000 to equip it.
And I'm assuming maintenance costs too.
That's correct.
Start running pretty high.
That's correct.
Is the bulk of your funding and sort of your support coming from these membership services, or is it coming from grants and donations?
The lion's share of our funding is through memberships. That's what keeps us alive. Certainly grants and donations and other funding that comes our way when it comes does help us. It augments that, you know, non-membership runs and things like that. But if we had to survive on non-membership runs, we wouldn't be in business.
You do offer non-membership runs, though. Is that correct?
We service anybody 24/7, 365.
Again, this is another question that could be posed to any of you. I mean, I know, Richard, you've been around for a lot longer, but were there any serious challenges or worrisome moments in the organization's history that it had to overcome, or have you felt like this has always been sustainable?
With any business, you worry how sustainable you're going to be. The early years were certainly a concern because there wasn't a lot of dollars then. There still aren't a lot of dollars. But it's certainly sustained itself through diligent board oversight and volunteers volunteering and trying to keep costs down. You know, our biggest thing, I think, is maintaining a good volunteer base.
I was going to say that's the time I've been associated with it. That's where I've seen the challenges come.
Yeah.
As our volunteer base diminishes in one community or another, and you're left with a core of four or five people doing the line share. And certainly we experience some burnout. And,
yeah.
But it always seems we'll do some sort of campaign or people will get the message and the volunteers come back.
How do you get volunteers interested? I mean, do people have to have background in medicine or medical care to start getting involved?
Not really. Anyone interested in driving can become a driver fairly easily with a training course. And we encourage people to come on as drivers first to kind of get a feel of what the organization is like and what the calls are like. And then we encourage them to go on to school and become an EMT. Some people join us wanting to become an EMT, and we provide the training. We pay for that in exchange for their commitment to serve the association for, right now it's a year of service in exchange for the EMT class.
It's usually people who just have a sense of responsibility to give back to the community. It's very basic. And our volunteers come from the entire range of people who, of types of characters who live in the valley, from very conservative folks to very liberal folks to traditional agriculture folks to, it's really reflects the entire makeup of our community.
So given that, like you said, I mean, the services are year-round, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, how do you and the rest of the people balance your personal lives with this sort of need to always be on call? Is that a challenge at times, or is it just worth it in the end?
It's always a challenge. From my standpoint, it's been the ability to help someone else in their hour of need. In a small community, you're part of that community. I think that's one thing that has turned my crank is being able to help those people that you know in their hour of need. And then for me, as I grow older, hoping that we still have that great core, I may need that service. And this is one of the best services I know about. And that may sound biased, but when you've got other communities looking at our service and wanting to mimic those things, something's going right.
I think our EMTs have heart.
Mm-hmm.
They do it out of the goodness of their heart. And technically, we are held to the same standards as the professional EMTs. We take the same training. We're required to make the same milestones with the state to keep our certifications up, and we do it without being paid.
Let me ask you, where do you think that the organization is headed? Is it going to continue to grow? Is it at a sort of stable place, or what are the ambitions here?
I hope it continues to grow, but in order for that to do and maintain, we've got to have a great volunteer base. People, again, being involved with the Norfolk from the membership side of it, and having a great volunteer base, driver, EMT, to keep it going. And if we get that and maintain that, and expand on that, then there's no reason why we can't be around for very long time.
As a board member, you know, we look at our financial stability going in the future, and right now we'll be okay for a year or two if the bottom fell out of everything, but that would be it at that. Another goal is to be sure that our equipment is modern and updated.
Right.
And is suitable for our area. We just purchased some thumpers. How would you call the technical word for a thumper? It's a cardiopulmonary resuscitative assist device.
That's one of the things you slam on the chest, and then they get electrified, and then they're back to life.
No. This is one that actually performs CPR on a patient. So cause sometimes we'll pick somebody up who's going to be 45 minutes from their next higher level of care, and an EMT having to do CPR, manual CPR, for that long a time, you can't. It's physically impossible. You fatigue. And so now we have these thumpers. It's a mechanical device that performs good, effective CPR for you.
Very effective.
For as long as you need it. Mm-hmm.
Have you all been out on runs yourselves? I mean, were there times where you were all driving the ambulances or helping out with that emergency care?
Yes.
I've never driven.
Sure. But you've been on the calls, yeah. I'm just wondering, I know you said a lot of this has to do with just a personal motivation to help people, and I'm wondering whether there were any particular stories during your time working with North Fork Ambulance that were particularly riveting for you emotionally or really motivated you to stay involved?
From my standpoint, any time that we're able to get that patient to the hospital and see them discharged and being able to go back and live productive lives, that's a charge. That's what I think keeps me going, is seeing those successes. And there are some times that you don't have success. And those are tough times, but you hang on to those memorable experiences by helping your neighbor. And every once in a while, they'll see you on the street and say thank you to you.
Yeah, I think when you respond to an emergency and you come up on the people and they get a look of relief on their faces that you're there, that you're there to help them, that's very worthwhile.
Yes, agreed.
Well, I'll tell a little bit of a war story. It was when Electric Mountain Lodge had an explosion. The call went out that were multiple injuries in a remote area. The ambulance was running up and down, bringing people back and forth. We set up a triage area in Paonia High School gym. We had volunteers coming out of the woodwork. Mm-hmm. We had 8 stations set up with IV poles and retired nurses, and the local nursing home here were bringing blankets, and the entire community organized around that emergency in the middle of the day with the ambulance being as sort of the core providers for that entire scenario.
Mm-hmm.
That made me realize that we were doing a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the
snow. Whole community. There was snow there too. That's right.
Yeah. Part there of it was the whole community rallied, and people were coming in with snow machines, bringing people out, helicopters, both from Olathe and primarily out of St. Mary's, bringing to the triage center, and it worked. It was.
And then typical for a small community, many of the local churches and other folks all of a sudden started showing up with food for everybody who was there helping as well.
That brings up a good point that I hadn't really thought about as far as the services that you offer. I mean, you're offering emergency care, but not only just somebody gets sick, somebody has a heart attack, but if there's some kind of catastrophic event around here, I guess you guys are just about it, really, to be on the ground.
That's correct. I'm
probably one of the first ones to go in.
Have you had any other experiences like that besides this explosion where you had to really rally all the troops like that and respond to something?
Well, we had another several years back where one of the coal mines had a what they thought was an explosion inside. And again, we rallied up at the site and established a triage center and had other folks scheduled to come in and help. And again, the community rallied. You know, there's been nursing home is another thing. You know, when years ago when their roof collapsed, we were the first ones to be called. Certainly the fire department was instrumental there also. But we got the people repositioned, whether it was to family members' homes, churches, other nursing homes, things like that. That was a busy day getting that all taken care of.
So I understand that the organization does some sort of prevention projects. Can you tell me what that's all about?
We try to do something that promotes injury prevention in the Valley. If you look at the emergency room statistics of Delta County, the greatest risk of injury, of anybody being injured, that leads to the most visits to the emergency room because of trauma is fall from standing. And so we did a little campaign last year about fall prevention. This year we're doing a safe driving for the golden years population in our valley. In the springtime, the organization puts together every other year a mock crash at the local high schools. And then we will do another prevention project at the elementary schools on the years that we don't do the big mock crash at the local high schools.
So going forward, what efforts is the organization taking to recruit more volunteers and help it continue to grow?
Well, we get out each fall and talk to people about becoming EMTs, and we, of course, look at all our drivers and encourage them to go forward. We also are forming an auxiliary group or a Friends of North Fork Ambulance for people who maybe want to volunteer, but they don't want to drive or become an EMT. Or maybe they've already done that, but they want to still help with the organization. We're putting together a group of those folks who can help with our little kitty train and with some public events that we do. It would take some strain off of the people running the calls. So that's going to be very helpful in the future.
If you're just tuning in, this is Local Motion, and I've been joined by members of the North Fork Ambulance Association. In the studio with me today has been Richard Kinzer, the North Fork Ambulance Board of Directors President and Operations Chief. I've also been joined by Kathy Steckel, the Director of North Fork Ambulance. And I've also been joined by Dory Funk, who's a physician in the area and on the board for the North Fork Ambulance Association. So thank you all so very much for joining us here on Local Motion today.
You're welcome, Travis. Thanks for the chance.
Thank you.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for tuning in to Local Motion today, your weekly source for conversations about what's happening in your world here on the Western Slope. This is KVNF 90.9 Paonia, KVMT 89.1 Montrose, and we're on the web at kvnf.org. Remember, if you missed any of today's episode or you'd like to hear old episodes of the program, just visit our website. Again, that's kvnf.org. Stick around for NPR's All Things Considered coming up next.